Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. Hey,
I'm coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Nation, and welcome to another edition of Steelcast from Behind the Steel Curtain. My name is Christopher Carter, and I'm joined by my co-host, my partner in crime, Danny Bostic. Danny, how you doing this Monday evening?
I'm doing awesome. I'm doing really well. I'm really excited to be here and talk about the awesome game from Sunday.
Indeed, it was awesome. If you didn't get to see it yet, and you're waiting to DVR, spoiler alert: Steelers won their first preseason game against the Green Bay Packers in what was the first game at Heinz Field for the preseason of 2015. It was a big performance. We saw six sacks from the defense. Really good performance. After the first drive, if you were watching, Aaron Rodgers led an attack from the Packers on their first drive that basically walked downfield, and all except for an injury that would sideline Jordy Nelson with a torn ACL for the entire season, it was pretty much a successful first drive. The Steelers would try to respond on their first drive. Ben Roethlisberger hooked up with Antonio Brown for a bomb of a pass, but it was called back for offensive pass interference, which, you know, I was actually at the game and in the stands. It was tough to see Antonio Brown get a push up, but you clearly see him get some separation. But it was one of those calls that, in my opinion, you see every day in the NFL, especially, like, you know, from the likes of people like Jordy Nelson. It's just become so common based. You know, if you call it, okay, but you got to call it 100% of the time if you're gonna make that call. But The Steelers would then punt and pin. There was a beautiful special teams play that pinned the Packers on the 1 yard line. And shortly after that, James Harrison steps up and makes what would be the first scoring play for the Steelers in a safety on Aaron Rodgers. And Danny, I can't tell you when he made that safety, the stadium erupted. I don't know if you could tell it on TV, but that made people the most excited to see that play happen.
I was super excited, and I think that James Harrison is either going to get way more snaps than Porter was planning for him, or he's just going to prove that he can make an impact on the fewer snaps that he gets. So I just thought that was an awesome sign that two games in a row he's making a difference.
Indeed, he's making a difference. And they also said after the game, I think they said Jarvis Jones or someone else has said that, you know, when he stepped on the field, everything turned up of quite a notch. And some people are worried that, you know, it's taking an old veteran that's coming out, that had to come out of retirement last season, to get people fired up. But you know what? That's part of leadership. You know, we got some young guys, and the defense is missing arguably its biggest leader in Lawrence Timmons right now. So, you know, there's a bunch of younger guys trying to find out who's what and what's who. And tell you what, anytime – it wasn't just James Harrison on the play. If you watch the play, it was a nice collapsing of the pocket. We'll break it down some more later. But it was a great team effort. After that, the Steelers then got the ball. They were unable to score right away on their second possession. But then the sack forced away Aaron Rodgers, and Tolzien came in to work with the first unit of the Green Bay Packers offense. The Steelers then forced a quick punt, and then Ben Roethlisberger led a nice drive that concluded with a Heath Miller pass over the middle that got them inside the 10, and then a nice little pass out to Marcus Wheaton for a touchdown. And Wheaton had several big catches on the day. He had quite, I think he had at least like two third down conversions, and then he had the touchdown pass. It was a nice day for Marcus Wheaton, who's trying to solidify his spot as the number two guy over Martavis Bryant. As the game would continue on, it was low scoring through the first half after Ben Roethlisberger left. Bruce Gradkowski went in. He went 3 for 5 for 25. Also, Ben Roethlisberger went 11 of 14 for 100 yards and a touchdown pass. Le'Veon Bell went six carries for 16 yards. They didn't give him a lot of looks, but the Steelers lost Marquise Pouncey on a really bad injury. It was just bad luck. As Bell was being tackled, they rolled up on Pouncey's ankle, and it looked really bad from the start. And as soon as you saw him down, you know, he suffered so many injuries like that in his career now. I think this is the third time that he suffered a similar kind of injury. And the news, and we'll get into the news later as to that, but he would leave the game, and it looked really bad. But as the game rolled on, Stephon Tuitt was added to the injury list. He had an ankle injury as well. But the Steelers were able to hang in there. Tolzien would throw a touchdown pass, the Packers were able to take a lead toward the end of the second quarter. And then they would trade field goals with the Steelers. Greg Hartley made a 46-yard field goal, and it was in the open end. So that was a good sign in the third quarter for Steelers fans to see that he could make a decent field goal in Heinz Field. But then Landry Jones would come out and have what was undoubtedly his best performance of this preseason when he threw 10 of 19 for 172 yards and 2 touchdowns. Though he did throw one interception, he was able to throw a nice 22-yard pass to Tyler Murphy and a 20-yard pass, touchdown pass to Shaquin Phillips. And both times I thought he did a good job putting it on the money and letting his receivers make plays, especially the pass to Phillips, Danny. I don't know which one you preferred, but Tyler Murphy had some moves, and he was probably my most impressed, the guy that impressed me the most. But Shaquin Phillips, Jones put the ball on the money to Phillips, and he went up and got it in traffic. And it was just one of those that's perfectly placed, and both him and Phillips made a really nice play.
I liked the Murphy play as well, so I think we're both right in preferring that. I can't say you're wrong this time, but I thought he showed a lot of potential, and just in terms of just concentration, vision, holding on to the ball, knowing where he needed to go. That was super impressive to me, and I just can't believe how deep we are at wide receiver.
It is crazy that at the end of the preseason, we're going to have to let some of these guys go or put them on the or hope that they just don't get snatched up on the waiver wire, and that we can stash some of them on the practice squad. Shaquin Phillips has made some really nice plays this offseason, and you saw that. He did actually catch the go ahead touchdown that would win the game for the Steelers late in the fourth quarter with 4:13 to go. And Landry Jones, I'll tell you what, you know, this was probably the first time that I could look at him and say, okay, you can be the third string quarterback. Because before, in the past two games, both you and I both were in pretty much in agreement that, you know, the performance that he was putting out was not good enough to be an NFL quarterback. And people want to say, well, he's not Ben Roethlisberger. We're not saying he's Ben Roethlisberger or that he should be Ben Roethlisberger. We're just saying be a viable option. If two guys go down, we can go to you and you can at least hold it together enough to let other people make plays and you don't lose the game for us. And yesterday I felt like Landry Jones did show some improvement.
I have to agree with you on that again, which is weird because usually you're wrong. I thought he looked bad, but it wasn't horrible. And I think that's the key word. It wasn't horrible. So there's enough talent in terms of the offensive line. Even with Pouncey out, I think Cody Wallace will do a decent job. There's talent in terms of Le'Veon Bell, D'Angelo Williams, a lot of good guys, very consistent blockers. So I think if something were to happen, and I'm knocking on wood right now, it wouldn't be a total disaster if Landry Jones can play the way he did on Sunday.
Right. And the Steelers, I mean, it was a solid performance. They had 15 unanswered points to end the game. They were able to come back and win 24-19. And, you know, it was against backups. It was a preseason game. But you know what? Landry Jones actually led a comeback, a fourth quarter comeback against a team of players that are also trying to make a roster. So, you know, kudos to him. He did a good job. And, you know, I think he gave himself more reason, like, this is why, you know, I still have this third string spot. And Bruce Gradkowski also had an injury in the game, so it looks like he'll probably get more reps now with the second team, and possibly even another more opportunities in these last two preseason games to show himself. But Danny, so you know that was the wrap up. Steelers won 24-19. Danny, who are your winners if you had to pick a group from Sunday?
I have to say the people I noticed the most were Shamarco Thomas and Antoine Blake. And the reasons why is because, you know, I've been fixated and completely obsessed about the secondary. Is it going to be okay? This is such a weak point. And I'm seeing through this preseason that despite all of our losses in the off season to retirement and, you know, guys switching teams, that it's not going to be that bad. As they adjust to cover two and get used to Butler, I think there's a lot of potential. And I was impressed with Shamarco Thomas, and I was very impressed with Antoine Blake, who I think had the play of the game on special teams when he was able to get the Packers. That led to the safety because they started on their own on their one-yard line. And that was a critical play out of a unit that has really, just for lack of a better word, sucked historically, not just in the first two games of this preseason, but also last season. You know, Danny Smith, the special teams coach, has been taking some heat, at least from me. But I was quite impressed with Antoine Blake making that play. It took a lot of concentration and set us up to be able to get that safety. And I thought Shamarco Thomas looked good. I mean, he had six tackles, I think, a sack, and some good work on special teams. So those were my two guys that I was most pleased with, just mostly because the secondary and the defense has struggled so much.
I agree with you there. If I had to pick, I'd be right with you in putting Shamarco as a winner. He had five tackles and a sack, huge performance, and he looked good in coverage. Like, some of those tackles were, you know, the Packers would duck down, and he was right on his man and was able to bring him down for no gain. Shamarco's not going to be Troy Polamalu, but they need him to be a consistent guy that they can rely on to be there and be quick, and he was very quick. Shamarco Thomas gets a winner from me. I put Tyler Murphy in that conversation. He had four catches for 61 yards and a touchdown. Tyler Murphy, he's a guy that can also play quarterback if they really need him to, because he's fast and he has the experience at quarterback. You know, for a guy, if you want versatility, that's how you make a roster. If you can perform multiple duties and fill multiple roster spots, that's how you could do it. Especially if Bruce Gradkowski continues to be injured, the Steelers are going to need a third option just in case they have Ben and then Landry Jones somehow gets hurt, and then you're just going to have, oh, we're just going to put James Harrison at quarterback because we're out of complete. No, they're going to want someone else on the roster that can do that. And if they can mix that with a guy who can be the fifth or sixth wide receiver option, he's making himself a good candidate. And, I mean, he's got other people right with him. Shaquem Phillips is battling, for it. Darius Heyward-Bey is still a veteran and a wily veteran, on especially for special teams. And then, of course, you have Sammy Coates, Marcus Wheaton, and Martavis Bryant all trying to find their space on the depth chart. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting battle, but I think Tyler Murphy deserves a winner. And if I had to pick a third winner, I think I would also pick Antoine Blake because sorry. I'm going to skip over Antoine Blake and just go different. Not to say that you're wrong with Antoine Blake, but I do agree.
I'm so right. You don't even need to repeat it. It's just super right. Cool. He had a great game.
You see what I deal with, people? This is what we deal with every day. Every day, Danny is just – and she's right. But I do agree you're right on that stance. I would give a winner to Bud Dupree, and simply because he had a rough week with the practice. He was in the fights. Everyone were talking about him. Who's this rookie think he is? He hadn't made plays in the first 2 weeks. There was questions. Why did we draft him? And he answered with a sack and two tackles. And he was also, if it wasn't for James Harrison getting down Aaron Rodgers as soon as he did, Bud Dupree might have decapitated Aaron Rodgers on that sack because he came in flying. And it was a good group pressure there. So I would make those my winners in Murphy, Thomas, and Dupree. Who, if you had to pick, would be some losers from this game?
Well, Injuries. I know he's not a player, but injuries was just devastating to us this past Sunday with Marquise Pouncey out with the ankle injury. Stephon Tuitt was out. And, you know, I hate to see another team's guy get injured. Jordy Nelson pretty much just getting tackled by the field and tearing his ACL.
Yeah.
So that was it's hard to call that a loser, but it's definitely one of the black marks on Sunday, just in terms of seeing these awesome players. Also in terms of Jordy Nelson, you know, I'm not a Packers fan, but it's never good to see somebody injured in the preseason, even if they're from an opposing team. So that was discouraging for me. I'm also going to have to go with Chris Hubbard. They plugged him in, I think, you know, at center to kind of see if he could handle it, and it's pretty clear he can't. So he did not have an awesome game. And if I had to pick a third one, that's tough. That is tough because I really thought even special teams was looking better. It's hard to find, it's just hard to find a downside to Sunday's performances. I'm just going to stop with those two for right now.
That's legit. I can see. If I had to pick some losers, and I agree, there weren't a lot of, like, really bad performances all around. So, you know, it's hard to just pick at someone. But if I were to pick someone, my first would be Bruce Gradkowski. And not saying that Bruce Gradkowski is, like, you know, horrible, but he didn't look good in his first chance to return to the Steelers, which, you know, is going to happen. He is a veteran, but he's coming off an injury that he didn't get a lot of practice time. But, I mean, he came out, like, 3 of 5 for 25 yards and was sacked and fumbled, which was lost, and then he was also hurt. So, I think it's a circumstantial loser situation for Bruce Gradkowski because he came out and then he got hurt and then Landry Jones came in and threw 2 touchdowns. So, you know, not to say that his job is in danger, but it's just unfortunate the way it works for him. I don't like putting injured guys on a loser list, but it just seems like there is a dark cloud around Marquise Pouncey's ankle sometimes. And it really sucks that he got hurt. And for people who want to say, oh, this guy's injury prone, why do we keep putting him out there? No, this guy is injury prone. There are 250-pound men falling on the back of his leg that will kill and hurt anybody's tendons and bones back there, especially at the angles at which it happens. I mean, it was almost identical to how David DeCastro fell on the back of his leg. 2 years ago. So, that was just bad. It just heart goes out to Marquise Pouncey. Hope that he recovers. And Stephon Tuitt's injury as well. I'd have to chalk it up to just the injury bug. I guess that you could consider the Steelers a loser in that right.
I was just going to ask if you noticed in the second half that there weren't as many injuries.
Yeah, I know. It was interesting to see. But, I mean, injuries are just – it is – to me, a lot of people are asking, why are so many people getting hurt in this preseason? But they ask that every year. There's always going to be some people that just get hurt. It's random. It's like lightning striking. You never know what's going to happen. You know, unlike lightning, it can strike in the same place, guys. It's one of those things where you're just like, you know what, it's unfortunate, but it's part of the game, especially when you have people flying around this fast, rolling all over the place, hitting people. You have to account for it, and it's just one of those things. I think it was just unfortunately it happened to three really good players, two spectacular players, and Tuitt, who's a riser. But thankfully, it looks like Tuitt will at least be able to return soon-ish.
I did notice it was really bad in the first quarter, and I think that's, you know, since we're a fan blog, I think this is where Steelers Nation needs to come together and try something different. So I changed my shirt and switched locations when I noticed the spate of injuries in the first half. No injuries on the second half. So I think that's where, as fans, we just need to keep our eyes open. Think, what can we do? Did you do your superstition routine? Are you wearing a jersey that wasn't lucky at some point last season? And just really be aware of what energy we're bringing to the game.
There you have it.
That's my message for Steelers Nation. It's
the Mystic
helpful.
Arts by Danny Bostic. Indeed, it can be helpful. I've done that myself a few times. I've You know, there's been some years I used to have – my game day – when I my first game ever game day jersey was a Hines Ward. And then when I started to get multiple jerseys, I had a Polamalu and a Mike Wallace. And this was back when, like, Mike Wallace was starting to get really explosive and he was an up-and-comer. So, like, he was the hipster cool, I got the jersey before you did pick. So I got him and Polamalu and Hines, and I think I had, like, a Willie Parker as well at the time. And this was, like, the 2010 season when we're trying to make the Super Bowl run. And I put on Mike Wallace for the first half against the Ravens in the playoffs. And, you know, the Ravens, they took that early lead. It looked really bad. I switched into my Polamalu, and then all of a sudden we exploded. And I was like, well, Polamalu it is for the rest of the year.
It has to be.
And then they had a great comeback. So there is some juju that goes into it. I'm starting to think I wore my Rod Woodson jersey yesterday at the game. I'm thinking, is that cursed? Because if it is, I'm not gonna wear it again. Ooh. Unless it's like an off day. So that was that. But moving forward. So talking about Maurkice Pouncey's injury, it does look like they said he broke several bones in his ankle and lower leg. He had surgery today and he's going to be out for like 3 months. And they're thinking of just putting him on the short-term IR so that he can hopefully come back in 6 to 8 weeks. But the good news is it looks like he's not out for the season, which as soon as I saw him down and then they showed the replay of the injury, it was just I thought he was done. I was like, well, there goes our center and our offensive line interior advantage for the rest of the season. But you know, it looked like if he can legit recover, come back and be the Maurkice Pouncey that we know and love, you know, there is going to be some hope. Especially you know if he has some fresh legs going into November and December.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not. I don't think it's a complete and total disaster. Primarily because I think Cody Wallace is a talented backup. I mean, he's almost like a Doug Legursky, reliable. Just get him in there, and he'll get the job done. Maybe not as well as Maurkice Pouncey, but he'll get it done well enough. And he's been in that position before. I believe 2013, Pouncey was out. And we had Velasquez come in. And he got hurt, and Wallace came in, and you know it was fine. And with Munchak at the helm for the offensive line, I'm honestly not too concerned. I freak out about all the injuries, and for some reason for this one, I just think, okay, he hurt himself. We have Cody Wallace, and maybe Pouncey will make it back at some point during the season.
I agree. It's you know it sucks because Maurkice Pouncey. I think people underestimate. Outside of the Steelers fan base, I think a lot of people underestimate how good he really is and what he really brings to the table. He's athletic, he gets off the ball, and he changes the line of scrimmage so many times. And you know, as a guy who used to play offensive line in high school, you know, when you look at for fundamentals and stuff and the things that my coaches really try to drill into me, he has a lot of everything that you want to look for. He's big, he's nasty, he's strong, and he's fast. It's like he has the whole package. And Cody Wallace surely will be adequate. And I think that we've seen, I mean, 2013, he did a good job coming in and it didn't look like he lost a step behind Fernando Velasco, but at the same time, you know, it's not a Maurkice Pouncey. So there is going to be somewhat of a drop off, but just hopefully not too much of one, but the Steelers should be prepared. They should be looking at, third options if they're not confident behind, Cody Wallace, because don't forget that Velasco was an emergency free agent pickup because they weren't expecting to lose Pouncey in the first week of the season, and I don't think they had the depth situation, and I think the person who was supposed to replace him got hurt, and then Velasco got picked up, and he was put in. And then after Velasco got hurt late, then they had to put Cody Wallace in. So I hope that they should have some contingency plans, but I think that they should be fine so long as no other freak injuries happen. But the good news is Pouncey's not lost for the season, just maybe half the season.
And it sounds like I was wrong about something. I invented a last name for Velasco. I just added some extraneous syllables to it. So thanks for the correct pronunciation.
Although
poor pronunciation seems to be a Steelers thing with Shaquem Phillips. And, Doran Grant, it's Doran, because I watched some of his old interviews at Ohio State, but so maybe that
Martavius.
I can just, I'm Martavius, yeah, I was noticing, Shaquem's my favorite, because it was to the point where I'm like, is his name really Shaquem?
started making me think I was stupid. Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. His name is really Jack. Because they said it in the stadium, and after he caught like a big pass, and I just looked over at the person. His name ain't Shackham. Just read the doggone. Why is it so hard to pronounce? It's like, I can't understand it. People call me Christopher? No, my name is Christopher. Just like his name is Shaquem. It's pretty straightforward.
Even Le'Veon Bell. It's not Le'Veon. It's Le'Veon. But anyway, so
right.
Velasco. I did a Steelers pronunciation and called him, I think, Velasquez. Made it up. So, yeah, but we also have Stephon Tweet.
Yes, Stephon Tweet.
Right?
Now that's a good old Yinzer pronunciation. But Stephon Tweet also starts defensive end. Oh, he also suffered an injury. It was also an ankle injury. Just bad luck. His wasn't as serious though. They're saying that it was an ankle sprain. He did get carted off, so it was a little nervous there for a lot of people. And he's been having a really good camp and a really good off season. They said he's been playing with controlled violence, and he's been changing line of scrimmage. And he's another very athletic big guy, but his injury isn't as serious. They're expecting him to be out a few weeks at worst. And Mike Tomlin slightly commented on saying that they expect him to recover and just miss a couple of weeks. So who knows? He may be back week one, maybe back week two, but it doesn't look like he'll be out. He'll need to go on an IR or anything. He just needs to rest his leg and get it better.
Yeah, so that was good news on Tuitt.
Gotcha. Other injury news. We're gonna go to this one real quick. Danny, you had an interesting piece that was just on one of the Steelers' key defenders and their current injury and why it could be bigger than what anyone's letting on about. But please do enlighten our listeners.
Absolutely. We have Lawrence Timmons with a toe injury. And, you know, you hear toe and you think, how bad could it be? Because toe is such a small part of your body. You're just like, well, what could your toe do? It must not be that bad. But it's not just a toe injury. It is turf toe. And I think if we recall correctly, the Steelers avoided Eddie Lacy for a toe injury. Now, he had a fused toe there, but even at the point where the injury was rumored to be turf toe, the Steelers were like, no, we don't want Eddie Lacy, because turf toe can be career-ending. It ended Jack Lambert's career. It ended Deion Sanders' career. It ended, it wasn't the official reason, but there have been other players, if you look at their stats, they, you know, come down with turf toe, and then all of a sudden, that's their last productive season. So this is definitely, and I think Willie Parker was one of those, so it's definitely one of those injuries that doesn't seem significant, but actually can end careers. And, you know, Timmons has been in the league, I believe, 9 years, so he's getting up there. And one of our commenters on Behind the Steel Curtain noted that, you know, you really don't see linebackers getting better with age. Quarterbacks might, but that's just such a rough position. You're opening yourself up to just a lot of physical contact, a lot of wear and tear on your body. So it definitely is, I think, more troublesome. You didn't hear me freaking out about Marquise Pouncey, even though it's broken. I'm thinking he'll come back. We have Cody Wallace, but I am really perturbed about Lawrence Timmons' toe. Definitely just thinking back to Jack Lambert and so many other football players whose careers have ended over turf toe. And what that basically is just, you know, there's different degrees of turf toe, but, you know, it's basically the ligaments in your toe because it's been hyperextended, which is common when you're pushing off to do the kinds of things the Timmons does. You know, just over, it could be a one and done where, there's turf toe just happened, or it could be something that gets vulnerable because of the repeated overbending of the toe during these forceful push-offs. So one remedy is to wear a different type of shoe, and as we know with, you know, athletic gear, that could change Timmons' ability to play if he's wearing a more rigid, supportive shoe. So, yeah, I'm real worried about that. How do you feel about that, Chris?
I mean, turf toe, I've seen some people get it and recover well. I've seen some people get it and it lingers, and it really hinders their career, and it even ends their career sometimes. You know, it's one of those things where I feel that the Steelers, they got a professional staff of doctors and trainers who are going to look at Timmons, and they're going to be able to tell him when he can go and when he can't go. And you know what? If this were the regular season, you know, there might be a different schedule here or worry, but it's the preseason. I don't need to see what Lawrence Timmons can do in the preseason. We know he's a hard-nosed player. We know he can move. We know that he's going to get the job done. Keep him on the – don't even make him an option. Say, sir, you sit there. You don't even have to practice. Just sit over there, talk to the rookies, get people's heads right. But right now, we gotta protect you because you're one of our primary interests. He's one of the higher paid players on the team. He might be the highest paid defensive player on the team right now. He's in the middle of a big contract with the Steelers. You do not want to see him go down. But he's in his late 20s. You're absolutely right. Linebackers age differently than quarterbacks. You know, Ben Roethlisberger is in his mid 30s now, so he's getting to that point where, okay, now these are the prime years of being a quarterback. But for a linebacker, especially a middle linebacker that's always throwing himself all over the place, covering people, hitting people, and with Lawrence Timmons' pedigree and with the speed that he moves at, I mean, he only has a few more years of being elite in my opinion. He can still be wily. He can still be like the James Ferrier that James Ferrier becomes, just put yourself in the right spot all the time. And that makes you invaluable to a defense, especially one that has other athletes around you and like they're trying to build right now. But yeah, it is scary to see. But I also trust in the Steelers management of how to handle that situation. But thank you for covering that, because that's something that I think no one else is really talking about, is what's the deal with Lawrence Timmons. You know, is this injury serious? Are we going to be needing to start Shazier and Spence or Shazier and Williams? Because Williams is also been sidelined with an injury, so lots of questions there. But good one for Danny covering that, because I don't think that's one that a lot of people are talking about. But yeah, moving forward, and tell you what, and we'll kind of combine these two points right here. The Steelers got 6 sacks yesterday, and that's something that a lot of people I don't think are talking about. One of them was on Aaron Rodgers, but it was a big one in James Harrison. And you saw the defense really get off the ball at some point. And it wasn't just Harrison that had that sack. It wasn't like Harrison was the only guy to do it. He was able to get by his tackle and pull a rip move, get in and get the sack on Rodgers. And it was a well-formed sack. You know, nothing they could find him for. It wasn't at the knees. It wasn't at the above the chest. It was right on the waist, bringing him down. There was nothing Rodgers could do. But Rodgers also had nowhere to escape to. And part of that was because Sean Spence, Cameron Hayward, and the rest of the defensive front were collapsing the pocket, and he had no space to wiggle out of and just escape and buy more time to find someone open. And you saw that throughout the game. Shamarco Thomas had a sack, and Bud Dupree had a sack. You know, you saw a bunch of players really starting to work together to bring together some good pressure. The new guy, Fort, got a sack. He even did the Joey Porter kick as a sort of salute to him, and I thought that was pretty cool. Wild had a sack. There was some good pressure, and I thought, like, you know, in the new age of the Steelers defense with Butler at the helm, it was a good sign to see that. And Bud Dupree, I give him a serious nod as a player for improvement in this camp, because of the last two games. You look to see something from a guy, even just effort that makes you say, oh, there's some flash from that guy, and we can look forward to seeing that as he continues to develop his skills. And for me, just seeing him yesterday, even in the place he wasn't getting sacked, but you just saw explosiveness and the speed that we saw at the combine. So Bud Dupree, just off of yesterday alone, would probably get one of my improvement nods. But who are you? If you're looking at improved players, Danny, who are you seeing on the Steelers roster as your improved player? And again, if you're a listener right now, please feel free to call in and tell us who your favorite improved player is so far in this preseason with 347-850-8581, and you can join the conversation. But Danny, tell us, who are your improved players?
I hate that we're agreeing today. It's just not our thing. But Bud Dupree did look a lot better. He looked quicker. He was making an impact instead of almost making an impact. I think part of the credit, though, for him goes to Kelvin Beachum and Marcus Gilbert for trash-talking him. I think that got him in gear. Whatever they said to him that made him want to fight, I think got him to a place where he was able to make an impact. So I believe half of his sack credit should go to Beachum and Gilbert. That's just my little thought on that. But Dupree looked a lot better. I thought Barry, I mean, it's funny to talk about a punter, but I thought he he looked a lot better. I had all but written him off after what he was doing in the Hall of Fame game, but I thought he looked really good in terms of punting. So he's kind of an odd one to choose, but I thought he looked pretty good. And then in terms of a unit, I've got to go. Special teams looked better, and I just thought the secondary seemed a lot more comfortable with cover two. And Antoine Blake, I thought, looked way better than he's looked in any game I've seen him play in, probably ever.
Okay, I dig you on that. And Antoine Blake, he's that guy. He's really fast. Like, if you see this guy move, he's got wheels on him. Issues his height and being able to play with his speed in the scheme properly. So I think he did do a better job, especially the special team. You saw a lot of effort, and that's the thing with Antoine Blake. There is a battle right now for corner spots, which is hilarious to think about, considering our problems at corner over the past several years. But, you know, with William Gay, he's probably going to be a starter. You know, Senquez Golson's hurt, but you still got Cortez Allen and Brandon Boykin who was brought in. And you got these guys trying to vie for starting spots. And Durant Grant is coming in here trying to take a spot. And Antoine Blake is the veteran who's going to be trying to hold people off. He's going to try and solidify himself. And he made some plays last year. If people remember, he had an interception that basically closed out the Colts game against Andrew Luck. I think he had a big interception against the Bengals, was it? I think it was. I can't remember if it was the Bengals, but I do know that in the last game of the regular season, he forced a fumble on A.J. Green that basically ended the comeback attempts with the Bengals. So, I mean, he's made some plays in the past, but it's not just about making plays. It's about being consistent in the scheme that you are given and making those plays. So I agree that seeing him play more consistently and continuing to show effort and just be an all-around athlete on the field that's doing his job, got to be excited about, definitely an improved player mark. So those are our Steeler notes, everybody. And just post-game talk, there was a lot to cover. You know, Antonio Brown had 4 catches for 24 yards. Marcus Wheaton, 3 for 42 yards and a touchdown. And he was really, I think there'd be one. I forgot, you know what, I'd put Marcus Wheaton on my winners list. I'm going to amend my winners because he showed up big time with some of the targets that he was getting. He worked his way into space while he was in traffic, found the open spot, and Ben Roethlisberger really looks like he's tuning up a well-oiled machine, Danny. I mean, if you know, we saw him last week against the Jaguars, one drive, one touchdown to Martavis Bryant, and I think that the touchdown they called back against Antonio Brown, they're not going to call that every time, and Antonio Brown didn't even really need to push off. He looked like he beat his man as it was. So, mm-hmm. You know, if they get more shots like that, you know, it looked like they really could have scored each of those, you know, both that drive as well as the drive they did score on. So lots to be excited about for Steelers fans from the offense.
I completely agree. And that continues to be just a source of joy for all Steelers fans, just the way that they're able to perform and deliver on a really consistent basis. And I thought D'Angelo Williams answered a lot of questions on the field this past Sunday, the question being, are we going to be okay without Le'Veon Bell? I think D'Angelo Williams told us yes, which he's been saying on Twitter. He was very outspoken, very just completely, hey, I've got this, I'm going to be there. And he's putting his money where his mouth is, and he's showing that he can deliver.
Yep, I agree. And D'Angelo Williams, yeah, he's shown that he can work, and he was running. Though he wasn't like springing big plays, he was running hard. And that's what you want to see. You're not going to get holes opening up for you that just take you to the end zone all the time. But as long as you run hard, know your assignments, and take advantage of what your offensive line is giving you, and just keep your eyes wide, you're going to make plays. And that's what we're starting. That's what we're seeing out of the veteran Williams, which is why we brought him in. So good stuff there. Again, if you want to call in and join us, the number is 347-850-8581. But moving forward, we're going to talk about some NFL news, and we're going to start with the NFL news that was with us on Sunday at Heinz Field, and that was the unfortunate injury of Jordy Nelson. And Jordy Nelson, it seemed like in the very first drive, and what was his first target, I believe, as well, from Aaron Rodgers, he caught a pass. He tried to make a move on Antoine Blake, and it backfired on him. Whatever it was, he just caught his leg wrong. and he tore his ACL. He got up and he was able to get off the field, but it was a significant knee injury. They were trying not to say that he would definitely be out, but it looks like they've said it now that he's definitely going to be out for the 2015 season with the severity of it, and that's a big shakeup for the Packers. Jordy Nelson, isn't like, you know, everyone's number one receiver in fantasy, but he's a top five receiver in fantasy. And, and for the Packers, I mean, he's such a clutch guy. He is he's the best back shoulder option that Aaron Rodgers has. He's a go-to guy and just really unfortunate. And you even saw Antonio Brown. They asked him during the game, like, so it looks like Jordy Nelson this was his injury. And he just looked so like saddened to see it. He's like, man, everyone knows that guy's a great player. It's horrible hearing stuff like that. And Jordy Nelson becomes the, another name on the list of preseason injuries that people are suffering. Kelvin Benjamin went down last week for the Carolina Panthers, and that's two big name receivers that are down. Arian Foster for the Texans is a running back that went down, though he should return this season at some point. I'll tell you what, Danny, it's never friendly in the preseason. There's always going to be injuries. It just sucks that sometimes the bigger names are those injuries.
It's sad. And speaking of bigger names and injuries, I was not happy with the way RG3 was just opened up to injury during the Redskins preseason game the other day. I thought Gruden put him at unnecessary risk, and I do believe he is to blame, because Robert Griffin III was playing without an effective offensive line, which became very, very clear very early into the game, and yet they kept RG3 out there, who continued to get hit and hit and hit, and finally ended up with a shoulder stinger and a concussion. And I just have to say that the Redskins organization is so dysfunctional to take RG3, regardless of whether or not you like RG3 or not. He is a young man trying to establish himself in the NFL, and to continue to just have such callous disregard for his health that dates back to Shanahan and this knee injury he had a couple of years back. It's just not fair. It's not fair to him, and I believe it reflects very poorly on the Redskins organization and Jay Gruden.
And you know what? I don't disagree with you. I do think that RG3 is a guy that they want to see more of. Like, you want to see him out there trying to improve his game, because he's not the best quarterback, at this point, he had a great rookie season, but since then he's been below average. Definitely not worth the picks that they traded for him. But that's beside the point here. When you look at how bad the Redskins offensive line was, because they were hurt from injury, and how much the Lions were eating them up. You want to send RG3 to give him a shot when you go out there, but after he's getting destroyed, especially after those first two drives, you don't send him out from a third, let alone a fourth. And Jay Gruden just kept sending him out there, and he just kept getting blasted. And it really makes you wonder, what is Jay Gruden's real motive there? Is it really to see what the best that RG3 has, or is it to send a message? And an anonymous NFL coach spoke out to ESPN this week, saying that it looks like it's personal over there in DC, and Washington, it really just looks like Jay Gruden might just have him. He's obviously not liked RG3 since he's been there. He's wanted him gone, it hasn't happened yet, because he's kind of RG3 is kind of the golden goose for Washington and Daniel Snyder. But it's unfortunate for RG3 that he's in such a situation. I agree with you. I point the finger at Jay Gruden in that situation. Yes, RG3 needs to be able to protect himself and play better in the NFL and work with what he has. But that was a situation that, especially in the preseason, you do not put your star quarterback in that situation. And if you take RG3 out, the Lions will then recognize it too, and they'll stop. They'll probably take out their starting defensive line if you're kind of like, say, hey, call off the dogs. We don't want this guy destroyed. It's only week two of the preseason for us. So I totally agree with you on that, Danny, that this was not a good look from the Redskins.
Not at all. It's so sad. But in other quarterback news, we have Terrell Suggs' big hit on Sam Bradford, and I thought Suggs' response was pretty hilarious. What did you think about that? Is Suggs a dirty player or not?
So, if you're listening, the issue that Danny's bringing up is perfect, because It was another quarterback who has a history of knee injuries, and that's Sam Bradford. Well, the Ravens were playing the Eagles this weekend. They got slaughtered by the Eagles. And I mean, the Eagles really pushed him around, but Sam Bradford on an option play handed the ball off to his guy, and Suggs, typical to how you're supposed to play the option, he sticks with Bradford, who's his man, and he puts Bradford down. But people are now in an uproar because of the way he put him down. Because when Suggs went after him, he put his helmet right into Bradford's knees, and if you see from an angle, he does, like, he leads with his helmet, but then he extends his arm, and he's just trying to bring him down. But a lot of people are saying, why would you do that? You see he doesn't have the ball, just pull off or bump him, because, you know, Sam Bradford isn't exactly a physical threat to Terrell Suggs. So a lot of people are questioning, was it dirty? Was it not? And my personal opinion, I don't think that going after the option quarterback is necessarily dirty, because, you know, when you run the option, you are making your quarterback a runner. And I have to be aware of the threat that he could be doing, and I have to let the quarterback know, listen, if you run this ball, I'm going to hurt you. So I'm all for sending messages, but this is a preseason game, and you're diving at the guy's knees. Now, if you ain't put your head in the guy's waist, or in the chest, and he also went head down. That's the other thing. Cardinal sin in football is putting your head down in the first place. That, to me, is a sign of you either need to work on your fundamentals, or that wasn't, or you just didn't care for the safety of Bradford. You were just you might have been trying to hurt somebody. So head down, looking in. I just was not a fan of the play. And I mean, especially and when you consider the history of Terrell Suggs, last year he had that really, really kind of just cheap shot on LeGarrette Blount, the whistle when the Steelers were beating on the Ravens in the mid season at Heinz Field. There was one play where LeGarrette Blount ran the ball and was stopped by three Ravens players. The whistle had been blown, and the Ravens players were pushing him back. And Terrell Suggs kind of comes up at the end of the play as, you know, that he's still getting pushed back, and just throws his whole body at the back knees of Blount. And it was just obvious. It was like, whoa, that was a cheap shot. And I don't think he got flagged for it, but he did get fined for it. And it's just one of those things that, come on, man. And Suggs, he said that, you know, they put a bounty out on Mendenhall and Hines Ward back in 2008. So, I mean, this isn't a first time for Terrell Suggs in talks of, you know, whether he's dirty or not. You know, I'm not so sure that the intent of trying to tackle the runner is dirty, but maybe the technique, maybe the technique is what I'd be concerned with. But Danny, how did you read the play?
I mean, Chip Kelly saying that Suggs misrepresented what was going on and that he was targeting the knee. I mean, the quarterbacks are so well protected; it's almost to the point where we're going to be playing flag football soon, or just not even the flag, because what if you yank the flag too hard and the quarterback falls down? So on the one hand, I'd like to say, yes, Sam Bradford's a football player, and if he's going to play like that, he's opening himself up to hits. I would say it speaks to intent, because I certainly didn't like it when Le'Veon Bell's knee was hyperextended in that game. I mean, that was horrible to see, legal play, but just looked awful and had some pretty bad results. So I would say if your intent is to injure a player, that's dirty. If your intent is to make an effective play that's legal, and in the course of that somebody ends up injured, then that's the nature of the sport. So that's my view on it. I don't have a really strong opinion. I think whining about it doesn't reflect well on the Eagles organization. I think Suggs's comment about it was actually pretty comical. And, you know, I can't say, oh, Suggs is the kind of player that's going to want to actually take Sam Bradford out of the game for the season. I think a lot of the players respect each other and want to see each other healthy, just also based on our response to Jordy Nelson's injury. Nobody likes to see that early in the preseason.
Right. Now, do you think that Suggs is a dirty player? Whether or not this was actually dirty, this play was dirty, do you think in his career he could be fairly placed with that label?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
I do.
Well,
don't you?
Yeah, we agree yet again. What is up tonight? Is there like a
pool
or something?
I don't know. This is really weird. It's very making me very uncomfortable. Well, I guess we could say for sure if Nkwa was here, he would be wrong. Somebody has to be wrong. What would he do if we're just agreeing?
Well, he's wrong because he's not here. Although he did show up big for us in our last show. I've never been a fan of Terrell Suggs. I've always been a fan of the fact that he's very good at what he does, and he's a mean dude, and you want to see a mean guy on a defense. But just the way that he carries himself, the excuses he makes when the Steelers beat them, and then just the cheap shots that he throws in the game. It's just not exactly not exactly admirable. And I mean, yeah, he's a rival of the Steelers, so naturally Steelers fans are not going to like him as much. But there's some players that I enjoy being rivals with, and Suggs is just not one of them. And I think that, you know, maybe the talk with Sam Bradford's a little overblown and saying that the Eagles – and then again, the Eagles came after him. It wasn't just fans. The actual players in the organization, you know, came out and accused Suggs of trying to hurt him. And I think it's because everyone – honestly, they're trying to get the Pope to bless Sam Bradford's knee. It's a scary time for Eagles Nation, I guess, and so they're going to point the finger there. But moving forward, we're going to talk some quick fantasy news as we get to wrapping up our show. We probably got about 8 more minutes to go. Quick talking. So with Jordy Nelson's injury, that takes out, if you were silly enough to be in a draft that was before week 3 in the preseason, like I was, you might have selected either Kelvin Benjamin or Jordy Nelson. So we talked about the fantasy impact of Kelvin Benjamin with Nkwa last week, Danny, but the impact of Jordy Nelson is a little more severe if you actually picked him. Fortunately, I did not. I was in a league that they were insistent on that we should just draft right now, give us more time to trade and everything, blah, blah, blah. And now there's this guy that you have Jordy Nelson, and he was your first-round trick pick probably. You probably picked him in the late first or the early second, and now he's gone. So this now opens up a huge hole in the Packers' depth chart. Randall Cobb's stock definitely rises. But if I had to pick one guy that would really see the highest raise, it's going to be Davante Adams. I don't know if you saw him, Danny, but he's a big part of their playoff, the Packers, that is, and he made several key plays. And he's a young athlete. He's a good investment in the draft that they made. And I really see him. I picked him in that same draft that I actually – picked early for, and I foresaw Adams having a solid year as a third string guy that they would bring in replace Cobb and Nelson to give them a breather and in the five wide sets. But now with Nelson out for the season, I really foresee Adams as a chance to become a star in the NFL, much kind of like we expect Martavis Bryant to be, maybe not the same degree, but I think he has the tools and he definitely has the quarterback to do so. So that's where I'm at on that point. What's your? I'm curious as to your opinion on this one, Danny. We've debated a few running backs here and there. What's your standing on DeMarco Murray and his situation with the Eagles? And do you think he's in danger of receiving a lot less carries with the way that they're gonna split the duties?
I mean, that's always a risk, but I do think he's super talented, and I think he's reliable. So you can't just look at flash. I mean, what's better, to get a solid number of points each week, or have the kind of player that's going to be amazing 1 week? And I mean, what's more frustrating than having one of those players who's like super flashy 1 week? You think he's going to be awesome. You start him for the next couple weeks, and next thing you know, he's not even having any carries. So I would definitely consider him to be a strong pick in a fantasy draft. I would pick him. I don't know how you feel about that, but how do you feel about that? Are we finally going to disagree on something?
I would pick DeMarco Murray, but not in the first, maybe not with an early second. I pick him with like a mid second round pick. If I have like second round and I have all these other running backs off the board, then I'm getting DeMarco Murray. But I mean, we saw the reason I brought this up, Ryan Matthews had a really big carry for the Eagles in their first unit, against the Ravens that went for a 14-yard touchdown. And you saw, really, it looks like that Chip Kelly could be serious when he's saying he's trying to split the running back duties. And DeMarco Murray, he had a 400 carry season last year. And statistically speaking, usually when running backs have those kind of seasons, they usually see a decreased number in the workload that they get, just because that puts some wear and tear on your body. So I think he's going to be farther back. I still think he's definitely worth an early pick in my draft that I already did. He was on the board. I took Le'Veon Bell and Matt Forte before I took DeMarco Murray, simply because I'm just not 100% sure what Chip Kelly's going to do with him in that offense. So,
and Chip Kelly's unpredictable.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's
you
like,
never know what Chip
do?
Kelly's going to do. Like, I mean, anything.
Right.
He could do it. He picked up Tim Tebow after all. So it's just a complete wild card. But the talent's there. The dependability's there. I think he's a solid pick. But I hate that I'm agreeing with you. But I wouldn't pick him first. But I don't think he's a stupid pick.
Right. It's not like he's a horrible pick. But I would go for other players before DeMarco Murray. So, man, we're again. All right. There's no way. There's no possible way that we can agree on everything. So with that, we're going to talk about our last topic of the night in fantasy news, Jameis Winston. Do you see him as a legitimate pick in a fantasy draft? Not saying early, not even saying mid, but would you make him your number two option at quarterback after, if you passed on like Ryan Tannehill and, Matt Stafford and all the guys that, Teddy Bridgewater, if you pass on all those options, do you see Winston as a viable option? Or, do you have to get someone before him and you're just begging for problems if your starting quarterback goes down?
I'm going to say no. I would not pick him. There's so many different quarterbacks, and depending on how many people are in your league, there's going to be somebody available that's going to be good enough, and I don't think that person is Jameis Winston. And I'm seeing here, just breaking news since we started talking, that he left his game with an ankle injury, and I am not sure if that means it's ankle injury, like Marquise Pouncey ankle injury, or if it's a little sprain. So, I'm thinking durability issues, unproven talent. So that's
could
where
be,
I am.
Could very well be.
Rich said he rolled his ankle. He rolled his ankle. He got tripped up by one of his offensive linemen, and then he got sacked. So he backpedaled to try to avoid falling and rolled his ankle and hobbled through the next play, which was an intentional grounding. So it just like I'm just skimming the news here, and I'm gonna say he's not ready for prime time. He is not, and he might even be the next. And I said this. I'm thinking Jamarcus Russell. He might be disappointing. Might be a bust.
He could be a bust, but I'm not saying he's gonna be a bust just yet. I think if you picked Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers, you have one of those type of quarterbacks at your disposal. So you're going to start every week that they are available, right? Like you're not going to skip on them any by the week, because those are guys that you know that if you put them in the game, they're 9 times out of 10, they're going to get you a solid 25, even 30-point week out of them and carry your team. But if you're a guy – so say you pick a guy like that, that gives you the chance to take a flyer out on a Jameis Winston, on a guy that's unproven, and that way you can invest all your early picks, all your mid picks, all even your late picks in getting depth for running back and receiver, and just getting people, even pieces that you can put together to get trades to get other players. But so a lot of people they'll miss out on a player maybe like Devontae Adams, who they're like a third string guy. They might not see it, but if an injury happens and they get the right opportunity, that becomes a stock riser, and then you can trade them to get a better player midseason or keep them for yourself. But I think Jameis Winston, I would pick him in the extreme case that you have a dependable number one quarterback that will not be fluctuating throughout the year. Now, say you did pick Ryan Tannehill, say you picked maybe a Colin Kaepernick, who, he's explosive, but not exactly reliable. Some guy like that, if it's not Russell Wilson, if you do pick a Teddy Bridgewater or a Mark Sanchez or a Blake Bortles, then you're putting yourself at risk by picking Jameis Winston. And I would say you better get someone else really quick if you waited that long to get your quarterback. But that would be the extent to which I pick him. I will not say that you're wrong on it, Danny, because I do agree you do not want to gamble your season's quarterback hopes on Jameis Winston. But I do think this man has a chance, and particularly because he throws to this guy named Mike Evans, and Mike Evans is just a monster, and he will be a monster, I think, in fantasy this year. So all Jameis Winston really has to do, ankle or no, just throw it up in the general vicinity of Mike Evans.
That's a good point. I mean, that's a completely good point. I mean, I think the quarterback we're overlooking here is Tim Tebow. Okay, no,
right.
You got it. It was a joke.
Who
you
would,
got it. I was waiting for you to – that was a test, because if you took me seriously, you were wrong.
I know. Yeah, you know what? No, I thought – well, I'll tell you this, Danny. There's somebody somewhere in some 16-person fantasy league that picked up Tim Tebow as a flyer joke and just to hold on to him just because they're like, you know, I just got to do it, Tebow. And they're probably just holding on to him on their bench all season just so that they can do a Tebow every time they beat someone and say, hey, I beat you with Tim Tebow on my roster. That might be a total troll move, but I might.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. We shouldn't talk about it here because if we're going to be in those BTSC leagues and we have listeners, we don't want people to snatch up our Tim Tebow. So we, I want to have the trash talking rights on that one for sure.
Hey, that's good. And that's a good plug actually before we sign off. If you're listening to us, and you like what you like listening to us and you like reading BTSC, please go to our website. You can scroll down. It's probably the fourth or fifth article down, but if you check the there's a way to sign up for fantasy football. We are going to be holding official Behind the Steel Curtain fantasy football leagues this year, and we've had quite a few people sign up, so we're trying to accommodate people's times for drafts as much as possible. Please email me or leave your information in the comments section at christopher.carter.63@gmail.com, but check the email or check the post that we had. It's a nice little article. It just says everything that we need from you, and it's going to be fun. You know, there's no money involved. It's just fun trash talking, and if you're doing well enough, we might even consider bringing you on the show if you want to. It's not like a mandatory thing, but if you're enjoying your time, we're enjoying our time, we're going to be talking about the selections you made throughout the year, why you start certain players, why you sit certain players, et cetera, et cetera. And who knows, maybe you can finally end my undefeated streak of fantasy blitz against Danny Bostic, because it's just atrocious what's going on here. But with that, I'm gonna give we're gonna do our final shout outs. Danny, you have any final note to say to our listeners this evening before we put to bed another Monday evening?
I would just say sign up for fantasy football. I think that's going to be a lot of fun, and I think people need to listen to our podcast and call in, because I think that sometimes our listeners are going to have an opinion on how wrong you are and how right I am, and it would be awesome if they could weigh in every once in a while. So that's all I've got, and I think they should follow us on Twitter. I am Danny Bostic, DanniBostick, and yours is long because it's got underscores and stuff in it.
Yeah, because, you know, there may not be a lot of Danny Bostics in the world, but apparently there's a whole ton of Chris Carters. Because, you know, Chris Carters, we do great things. We make touchdown receptions and go to the Hall of Fame. We write the X-Files. We also apparently get drafted in the fifth round by the Pittsburgh Steelers and then go on to play for the Bengals. But, you know, and then there's also just being the Chris Carter from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that writes for BTSC. Amazing people like those individuals I just mentioned. So it's a little harder to get the Twitter names of Chris Carter. But, yeah, I'm at Chris Carter _CU_Carter. The CU is for the first HBCU chain university. But anyways, so shout out, I guess my shout out would be just, hey, we got to win. For anyone that feels like the defense is a major problem, because it has been in recent years, have hope. This was a good weekend for the performance that we saw. Six sacks is a very solid number, and I'm telling you, it wasn't just like luck sacks. It wasn't like they just slipped by and they knocked the guy down and they just happened to push a guy over. No, they were bringing heat, legitimate pressure on the quarterback, and it wasn't just any quarterback. They were able to get to Aaron Rodgers and get a safety on him. So there's hope for this defense yet. And who knows? You know, as excited as we are about the offense, maybe at the end, by the end of the year, we'll be singing praises about this defense combining with this offense and looking at arguably the best unit in all of football. But with that, it's 11:34 here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The night is quiet. Everyone's really happy. The Steelers won this weekend. the Pirates beat the Giants in the series, and they've just beaten the Marlins tonight 5-2. So it's a pretty good evening for a sports night. Danny, thank you again for being such a great co-host and for, you know what, actually being right a little bit some of the time.
I was right.
Knowing what you're talking about, because
absolutely,
most of the time you're wrong.
Obviously, you're wrong, but we'll dispute that later once we have somebody to, mediate our disagreements.
I got you. And obviously, we're going to have Unko on here. We also might have a few guests coming through. If you're listening and you want to join in, please call in. We love having guests, and who knows, maybe you can play some of the games with us. We got some other game ideas. And if you have game ideas, mention to us in the comments section. We love to hear from our readers. People email us all the time, and we take in what you want to hear and put it back out for the show. But it's getting late. It's getting other time, so if you're listening on iTunes in the morning, know that we put in the hard work for you guys, and we appreciate you because that's just the kind of love we bring to the table. But that being said, I'm Chris Carter with Danny Bostic signing off. Go Steelers.